too? Or just skip?
Welcome to the Hinckley Institute of Politics. My name is Sarah Stevens, and I will be the host for today's Hinckley Forum. The Hinckley Institute was established in 1965 through the generous bequest of the Noble Foundation and Robert H. Hinckley. The Institute is dedicated to teaching students respect for practical politics and the principle of citizen involvement in the government. The Hinckley Institute offers paid internships to students of all majors, locally in Washington, D.C., and in 35 countries around the globe. The Hinckley Institute also offers classes, the nation's only campaign management minor, and over $70,000 in academic scholarships. We invite students to go next door or to visit our website, www.hinckley.utah.edu, for more information. The title of today's forum is Campaign Finance After Citizens United, Colbert Super PAC, and Other Less Hilarious Phenomena. Today's guest is Matthew Sanderson. Mr. Sanderson is a University of Utah graduate and a former Hinckley staffer. He is an associate in the political law practice group Kaplan and Drysdale in Washington, D.C., where he advises clients on campaign finance, ethics, and lobbying rules. Mr. Sanderson has worked with the Colbert Report team on the famous television personality Stephen Colbert's Super PAC. He is also the founder of the Playoff PAC, which was nominated in 2011 for Sports Illustrated Sportsman of the Year Award for its work in bringing down the Bowl Championship Series. Mr. Sanderson is frequently quoted by major national media outlets on political matters. Please join me in welcoming our guest.
Well, I apologize for being a little bit tardy, but it's so good to be here. I'm thrilled to be here. The Hinckley Institute was my favorite place on campus when I was a student here, and Tim and Kirk and Jane are three of my favorite people I met while I was here, so it's good to be with them and with you today. So I'm one half of the two-man legal team that Stephen Colbert once referred to, or once compared to the great American duo of Harold and Kumar. So we had the pleasure, my colleague Trevor Potter and I, as well as others at our firm like Kirk Jowers, had the pleasure of representing Stephen Colbert and Colbert Super PAC. It was a very successful endeavor, including it raised over $1 million somehow. People gave him that much money. And it won a Peabody Award, which is the top award for excellence in television. And I think the reason for that is because not only was it very funny, but it was also accurate. It correctly parodied and reflected everything about the campaign finance system of today. And so I thought, you know, rather than me try to be funny or be entertaining, I thought the best way to view campaign finance would be through the eyes of Stephen Colbert. So we're going to actually start off with a clip from the show about Colbert Super PAC. Or we should be. Okay. So just while this is queuing up, one of the things that I really liked about okay, here we go. Okay. One of the things I really enjoyed about Stephen, like I said, the best thing about these videos is not only are they accurate, but they're funny. And the best thing about Stephen's commentary is he said to us, when we first went into his office, he said, "We want to make sure that we do things accurately because our method of commentary around here is that we throw ourselves." The way he put it, which I thought was really interesting, we throw ourselves into the middle of the pond and then we comment on the ripples, which means, you know, they haven't ever been content to merely another way to comment on others' actions, but they actually try to go forward and do things themselves. Like, You saw he had a rally that he hosted with he had a rally that he hosted with John Stewart. He sponsored the U.S. speed skating team. There are a lot of things that he does along these lines where it's real life action. This was a real life super PAC, and here's he's going to talk here in this clip about starting that up.
Real reason that Kane wants to get with this. Everyone in D.C. is talking about my fundraising political action committee, Colbert PAC. Founded by me, so that this election, you, the Colbert Nation, can have a glimpse into the show, everybody. But before we go, I would like to thank...
Okay, sorry about that. Let's
throw
this over.
Colbert,
having some technical difficulties.
We all know the real reason that Kane wants to get with this. Everyone in D.C. is talking about my fundraising political action committee, Colbert PAC. Founded by me so that this election, you, the Colbert Nation, could have a voice in the form of my voice shouted through a megaphone made of cash. Now, when I announced Colbert PAC on the air, my parent company, Viacom, freaked because legally, it is illegal. Corporations cannot donate to PACs, and they say using my show to talk about my PAC is a donation. So I did the right thing. And I exploited a loophole. You see, thanks to the Supreme Court's Citizens United ruling, corporations who can't give any money to a PAC can now give unlimited money to something called a super PAC. But there is a crucial legal distinction between a PAC and a super PAC. One has the word super in its name. So I took Colbert PAC and I made it Colbert Super PAC. PAC. Super PAC. Clark Kent, Superman. Bruce Wayne, Batman. Gordita, Gordita Supreme. But even this was not good enough for those idiots at Viacom who employed me and made me a star. Because I just got this letter right here from Viacom's lawyers. Here, I'll read it to you on the air. They say, please do not read this on the air. Okay, did not see that coming. All right, Jimmy, let's remember to edit that out, okay? Let's see. I'll just give it a skin here. Do not. Meow, 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 meow. Okay, I'll paraphrase. We are stupid lawyers who hate fun. If you do this, we're all scared that people might get mad at us. I think we just peed a little. So even though we know it's totally legal and everything, everybody wants you to do it, we're not going to let you do it. Sincerely, Admiral John Q. Buzz Shackler, Esquire. I just can't believe it. I hate my parent company. They never let me do anything. Everyone else's parents' company let them do it. Karl Rove is a paid employee of Fox News, and he gets to talk about his super PAC, American Crossroads, all the time.
American Crossroads, American Action Network, and other groups have announced a $50 million house surge strategy. There's a new poll out from American Crossroads. Full disclosure, I'm involved in a group called American Crossroads.
He can have his cake and eat it, too. And imagine how much cake he eats. Fox also lets paid contributor Dick Morris do it. See if you can spot him subtly slipping his super PAC into the conversation.
I've set up a thing called superpacusa.com. SuperPacUSA.com. I have this thing called SuperPacUSA. SuperPacUSA.com. SuperPacUSA.com. Don't watch the show without a pencil and paper.
Yes, always watch the show with a pencil and paper, Fox viewers. And if you don't have pencil privileges, explain to the day nurse that it's for America. And folks, it's not just Fox. NBC Universal is fine with Donald Trump running his mouth off about his political ambitions on The Celebrity Apprentice.
Everybody's saying I should run for president. Let me ask you a question. Meatloaf, should I run for president?
Absolutely.
Incidentally, Meatloaf, should I run for president, is the same question Chris Christie asks his dinner every night. And to date, the meatloaf has not been given time to answer.
Okay, so how did we get to this point? How did we get to the point where Stephen Colbert, a comedian, is talking about campaign finance? Campaign finance is usually something that only academics or the editorial page of the New York Times really cares about. But this became a big issue. This has become a big issue over the last little bit. Campaign finance actually has a long history in the United States, going back to 1907 when the Tillman Act passed. Teddy Roosevelt helped enact the first campaign finance legislation in this country. And there are various ins and outs of different legislation that happened in between 1907 and the 1970s. But it actually all starts, I think, the best way to look at it is it all started with Richard Nixon. So as you know, he won two terms as president. And you all know about the Watergate scandal as far as the break into the Democratic National Committee headquarters and the various things that happened with that. One of the additional parts of that Watergate scandal involved campaign finance, though. And a lot of campaign finance problems. So one was you had repeated quid pro quo arrangements, this for that type of arrangements between various campaign contributors and the Nixon administration. So I've converted all these figures into 2013 dollars just so you can fully appreciate how much money was flowing back and forth. One of the main contributors was the dairy industry. The dairy industry contributed $11 million, the equivalent of $11 million in 2013 dollars, to Richard Nixon's campaign. In return, they got milk price support, so there was a minimum level that the government would subsidize to support the price of milk, worth $3.2 billion in today's money. So they gave $11 million, they got $3.2 billion back. Ray Kroc, the founder of McDonald's, back in the 1970s, they had price controls on because of inflation. They wanted to control how much consumer goods could, how much a business could charge for consumer goods. They wanted to raise the price of the Big Mac from 59 cents to 69 cents. They were first denied that ability to do that by the Price Control Commission. Ray Kroc gives $1 million. And afterwards, they're able to raise that price from 59 cents to 69 cents, obviously worth a lot of money with how many quarter pounders they sell. ITT Corporation had an open Department of Justice investigation against it. It gave $550,000 to the Republican National Convention. That investigation was dropped. Clement Stone, the insurance magnate, gave the equivalent of $50 million in 1968 and 1972. He was to end up receive before Watergate broke. He was to receive the UK ambassadorship. Robert Allen, same thing. EPA investigation gave $550,000. It went away. Nikos Vardino got $4.7 million contract in return for $100,000 campaign contribution. Robert Vesco just wanted a meeting. He had to pay $1 million for that. So I could fill up pages of these quid pro quos, exchanges, official action for campaign contributions. But this is what happened repeatedly in the Nixon administration and previous administrations before that. With Watergate, Congress decided it would be enough, and they decided to pass real, meaningful campaign finance legislation for the first time. As part of that, they limited the amount you could give to a candidate. No more $11 million contributions. It had to be, at the time, it was limited to just $1,000. And it limited the overall spending that someone, if someone wanted to take out an ad and and run an independent advertisement, that was also limited. So, and then for the first time we had public disclosure, and then the Federal Election Commission was founded or established through the Federal Campaign Finance Act. And that was important because you had laws on the books, but they weren't even being enforced. So this is major legislation at the time. And this was tested in the campaign finance case of the Supreme Court. That's still kind of the seminal case in this area. It's called Buckley v. Vallejo. And the real question that the court was wrestling with in that instance was, is money property or is it speech? Is it property or is it speech? And Justice Stevens said it was property. Justice Stevens said, look, you know, this is just money, and we have a habit. We've allowed in the past the government to regulate all sorts of commercial activity, from, you know, how the rules to selling meat or drugs or all this type of, every type of commercial activity we've regulated in the past. This is nothing more than I'm giving money over to a candidate, and because I'm giving money rather than talking with my mouth, that's property, not speech. And so it's not subject to First Amendment protections. The majority said, though, they pointed out that, you know, virtually every way you communicate in modern society has to be funded with money. You can talk all you want, but if you really want to get your message out to the public, it takes money. You have to buy a newspaper ad. You have to take out broadcast time on a television station, print up flyers. Everything costs money. And so what the Buckley majority said is basically recognize kind of the middle ground between those two, between the position of is money property or is it speech. They said, well, it's both. So money is important to facilitate speech in modern society, but it also has a capacity to corrupt our governance system in a way that, you know, just talking to someone can't. That money, as demonstrated in the Nixon administration, could be very corrupting to the governance process and undermine the entire reason for a democratic republic. If people can be bought off, then that undermines the very purpose of the Constitution. So they tried to strike this balance, and what they ultimately said was this. So if I'm a campaign supporter, I can give a contribution, and that can be limited. That can be limited to a relatively low dollar amount. And here, today, it's $2,600. That's all that Barack Obama, that's all that Mitt Romney could accept in the 2012 election. It was $2,600 per election. So they would have to go and raise. They spent a lot of time fundraising because of that, because they have to vacuum it up in little increments. But the court said, okay, so, and the reason for that is, you see the arrow of the money going up to the candidate. They're worried about the Nixon situation. They're worried about the arrow going back to the person. What are they getting in return? And the idea was that if we limit it to very low amounts, then they're not going to get anything back. And if they get anything back, it's going to be relatively harmless. It's going to be a handshake or a photograph or something like that. What they said, though, with independent speech, so the money's not going to the candidate. You're not writing a check to the candidate. You're not even coordinating with the candidate. In that case, the Buckley majority said, this looks exactly like free speech. This is like someone speaking. This is someone taking, if someone takes out an ad and doesn't talk to the candidate, well, that's different. We're not worried about the quid pro quo arrangement that we might be with a contribution. So this is kind of, a lot of people think it's strange, but this is the basic framework for campaign finance, and it has been since 1976 when the opinion came out. One other thing I should point out, okay, right here, as of Buckley, as of 1976 and even later, corporations, so that building is a corporation, corporations are different than individuals. They're treated differently under the law. And the Federal Election Campaign Act banned corporate spending of any kind. in elections. And the court upheld that. So you have this dichotomy between individuals and you know, artificial persons. Okay. So there are quite a few campaign finance opinions that happened between Buckley in 1976 and Citizens United in 2010. They're all very long. Some of the longest opinions in the Supreme Court are about campaign finance because of this difficult issue. Is money speech or is it property? They're continually wrestling with that in different contexts. But fast forward to Citizens United. How many of you have you heard of Citizens United? Okay. Yeah, it's been a talked about issue since that came out in January 2010. Let's talk a little bit about that case because I think it's important to at least understand the basics. Citizens United was a nonprofit organization. It was incorporated, and it accepted corporate money. So remember, going back here, corporations are not permitted to spend money on elections. Well, they accepted corporate money. They were themselves a corporation, and they wanted to sponsor, you can kind of see it in the background, it's a little bit too bright, Hillary the movie. And I don't know how much you know about this, but very interesting piece of cinema. Citizens United made this movie called Hillary the Movie. It's supposedly a documentary about Hillary Clinton before she started running for president in 2008. And it featured all sorts of very objective commentators like Ann Coulter and Dick Morris saying things like, Hillary Clinton is the closest thing we have to a European socialist in America. So very election-oriented. Obviously, in the run-up to the 2008 election, they wanted to run commercials advertising this movie. They wanted to talk about this movie in a lot of different ways, and they wanted to offer on-demand films. So they had this out there. They have this movie, and the thing was, it was made independently from any Republican candidate. So we go back to this dichotomy. Well, it's independent, so supposedly it doesn't have this kind of quid pro quo danger that a contribution might, but it's also a corporation. So it's testing the band to see whether a corporation can make independent expenditures. And what happened was the court struck it down, okay? And it was based, the court ultimately struck it down, that ban, and said, you can make independent expenditures if you're a corporation. You still can't make contributions. You can't write a check if you're a corporation to a candidate, but you could take out your own ads. You can give your money to someone else with the idea that they'll sponsor some ridiculous ad, some attack ad with the tagline of a ridiculous group at the end, paid for by Americans for a better tomorrow. That type of an ad can be funded by corporate money. And so that's what happened in 2010. And it was based off of two assumptions, this whole ruling. One is that independent speech would be, quote unquote, totally independent from a candidate. They looked at that and they said, look, this is, since it's going to be totally independent, there's no danger of trading official action for independent spending. There's no danger of that. And the other was, They this is actually pretty remarkable because it was a split decision. It was 5-4 in favor of allowing corporations to make independent expenditures. But they actually, when they talked about disclosure, the vote split was 8-1. So eight of the nine justices in a very divided court were in favor of disclosure, and they even commented, hey, this is going, we don't need limits on corporations because the disclosure will do the work for us. People will know that what they're spending and where they're getting the money, and they'll be able to hold them accountable. We don't need a government agency to do that. So this is what they came up with, and it was based off of those two assumptions. And we'll come back to whether those assumptions really reflect reality in just a moment. But the legal effect, a lot is made of Citizens United. But the legal effect was actually pretty modest. It didn't move the needle that much. on what was actually the state of the law. Basically, it allowed corporations could say, Bill Yellowtail, which is this is an actual ad, Bill Yellowtail beats his wife, call him and tell him you don't appreciate it. And that wouldn't be considered an election ad. But they couldn't say, vote against Bill Yellowtail, he's a horrible human being. They couldn't say vote against, they couldn't say vote for. Corporations weren't able to sponsor those types of ads. So what Citizens United did was it allowed them to do that for the first time. So as you can see, it didn't really move the needle all that much. But what was important was for the first time, people kind of started taking this as an informal cue that, hey, the Supreme Court really isn't going to uphold these types of regulations anymore. So the Federal Election Commission, which as we talked about is in charge of campaign finance at the federal level, they started loosening all sorts of restrictions based on the Supreme Court's decision. They said, hey, we don't need these rules as much anymore, the Supreme Court said. Individuals started doing the same thing. And remember, individuals have always been able to make independent expenditures. But they didn't do so even close to the same frequency as they did after Citizens United. You see in outside groups, so they started spending a lot more money. And by outside groups, I mean groups that are not parties, political parties, and groups that are not candidates. So they spent only $53.9 million in 2006. They spent $1.25 billion in 2012. That's about one-seventh of the total election spending on federal races in 2012. So you can see that that skyrocketed. And the difference there really is Citizens United. You have a lot of different types of groups. But I think one of the important things here is 320-plus super PACs have been formed. So this is becoming part of campaign finance. This is really a part of what the structure is. So that's how Stephen Colbert kind of came to start talking about super PACs, about Citizens United, about campaign finance, is because you see from 2006, $53 million barely makes a noise. There are some groups that were around back then, but it barely makes a noise in 2006, the outside groups. But they ramp up their volume of speech so significantly that they're spending over $1 billion in 2012. So that kind of trend was something that Stephen wanted to talk about and one thing that he ended up commenting quite a bit on were the revisiting the assumptions that Citizens United was based upon. Remember, okay, so the number one assumption was that if it's independent, okay, so if it's over here, if it's on this side of the ledger, if you're not writing a check to a candidate, if you're not interacting with a candidate, then there's no danger of corruption. And they just assumed that if the rules said it was independent, then it was, quote unquote, totally independent. Well, one of the interesting things, and unfortunately we don't have time to watch this video, but one of the interesting things is the FEC rules that provide for independence of campaign spending actually do allow quite a bit of interaction between candidates and the groups that are sponsoring these outside ads. So, for example, you have Mitt Romney, his campaign, and then you have Restore Our Future, which is a super PAC. It was founded by former Romney staffers, so the donors could know that that was kind of the official group. Mitt Romney even went and solicited money for that group. And so there's a lot of interactions that were allowed between candidates and outside groups that compromise this independence. And so it doesn't necessarily guarantee that there won't be something flowing back in return for sponsoring an independent ad. Sheldon Adelson spent millions of dollars to prop up Newt Gingrich's race and his campaign. What would have happened if Newt Gingrich had won the presidency. It's not apparent that he would have been, that Newt Gingrich wouldn't have felt indebted to him in some way after spending millions and millions and millions of dollars, even though it didn't go directly into his campaign coffers. So, and I don't mean to pick specifically on Republicans. President Obama had the same exact arrangement. Different in that he himself did not solicit funds, but they had Priorities USA, founded by former Obama staffers. Obama sent various people to go and solicit money and appear at their events and kind of give it the thumbs up and the seal of approval. So that, I guess, is one thing that one of the assumptions that there wouldn't be any coordination, one of the assumptions that the justice has made in Citizens United, not necessarily accurate in reality. The other assumption was that there would be disclosure, full disclosure. Everyone would know how the money was moving. And Tim, do we have until 25 after? Okay.
I know there are a number of folks who like to ask
you
questions.
Okay. So I'm torn whether to show this video. And again, I apologize for being late. What I would recommend, let's go ahead, let's forgo the videos. The coordination video, which is very interesting. If you haven't seen it, it's on The Daily Show, but it's basically Stephen Colbert and Jon Stewart, who during Stephen's run for president of the United States of South Carolina, managed the super PAC, and they're sitting there talking about how they can how the super PAC can help without officially coordinating Stephen's race for president of the United States of South Carolina. And then disclosure, we helped Stephen found what's called a 501c4 organization, and all of that money is off the books. None of that money is disclosed, and those were used quite frequently in 2012. But we named it Anonymous Shell Corporation, and it was founded by Stephen, and he was the sole officer and the lone director for that. So it was basically Stephen. But anytime an ad would have been run, it would have said "Paid for by Anonymous Shell Corporation" on it, and that was to basically, that showed or commented on the fact that this assumption is really wrong. The assumption that the justices made in Citizens United was actually incorrect. There are a lot of ways to hide money and keep donors secret in the existing system. And so not all money is out there for the public to view. And if you think that sunlight's the best disinfectant, sunlight isn't reaching a lot of corners of the campaign finance system. So I guess, again, I apologize. What I would do is, one of the things we're really proud of is that that my colleague Trevor Potter and the Super PAC skits, those bits, have now become one of the more popular and more frequent segments of the show. There's actually more Super PAC segments on their website now than his Better Know a District piece that he does repeatedly. So it's been a lot of fun, but just go, if you want to watch some of the videos, which are all, again, accurate and accurately reflect, it's obviously satirical, so it's a little bit blown out of proportion, but at the core of it is reality. And so go ahead, and I encourage you to go take a look if you're interested in learning about campaign finance and what's happening today. I think a good way to do it is actually go to the Colbert Report and watch some videos. So, does anybody have questions? We have a few minutes for
8 minutes.
8 minutes.
So I wanted to know what.
Oh,
I'm sorry. My name is Dana Winters. I want to know your personal opinion on money spending for campaigns. What do you think people should do, or candidates should do with their money?
What do I think they should do?
Yeah,
like what types of things they should spend their money on?
What's the logical thing you would
suggest people, candidates do with their money?
Well, I actually think that it is what they do currently is logical. If it wasn't logical, they wouldn't do it. They wouldn't run negative ads if they didn't work. They wouldn't, you know, put out inaccurate statements or over exaggerations if they didn't work. One of the things about this is that I've come to realize over time is the rules are important, and I think there should be campaign finance regulation. But it's ultimately incumbent on the public to look at these issues and be more active. And that's part of what you're here for, and being involved in the Hinckley Institute in one way or another, is to be aware of what types of issues are out there so that you don't need so that eventually there's not the demand for negative ads that there is today. I think it's unfortunate. I wish every candidate would spend money on voter outreach and real issue ads. But I think that's just not what people respond to. So it's up to every one of us to be a little bit smarter consumer of political information.
My name is McKenna Nielsen. What would happen if a candidate didn't spend all the money that was given to them?
Well, that's actually very interesting. You can do a lot of things with leftover campaign money. You're not supposed to be able to use it for personal use. So if it comes into a campaign committee, you can't use it to go pay your rent or buy toilet paper. By the way, you could do that if you were running a super PAC, though. That restriction does not apply to super PACs and other types of organizations. It's only candidates. Oftentimes, candidates will roll it over into another race. So if they're running for Senate and they have a lot of leftover campaign cash, they want to run for governor, if the state law allows it, they'll roll that over. They'll start a charity. They'll keep it in their campaign coffers to pay for various expenses. They'll start a leadership PAC. There are a lot of options.
My name is Christy Lusty. So during the Nixon administration and all of that spending, so that was before he was elected, correct?
Right. Well, he was – no, that was –
Or was it during his actual administration? Was it during the first –
It was 1968 and 1972 during the course of those two campaigns.
Okay.
So, yeah.
And so the money that was collected and all of those promises, were they necessarily fulfilled because of the next, legislation that was made because of all of that spending money? Or, how did that all play out?
Well, it played out differently in different circumstances. Some of the money was given in 68, but most of it was given in 72 when he was already in government. So he could affect, whether the Department of Justice went forward with its investigation of ITT Corp, or that he could affect what the Price Commission did with the price of McDonald's Quarter Pounders. He could affect that change. And so the money would come first and then the action, but that's essentially what happened over and over and over again. Giving a campaign contribution, getting something back from the public fisc that was much more valuable.
Did government do something to halt that?
Well, that's what the Federal Election Campaign Act really was, right? So it was trying to cut down on that problem by lowering, there was no limit on how much you could give to a candidate before. And so they lowered it from unlimited down to 1,000 at the time is how much you could give. Good question.
My name is Ben Bartholomew, and what I'm curious to know is, do you believe that it would be possible to regulate the system to eliminate corruption without regulating free speech?
Well, that's really the tension, right? And that's one of the reasons why I find this area of law very interesting, is because it is, like I said, in modern society, virtually every type of speech really costs money. Even with the advent of the internet, cost money to pay someone or have server time, that type of thing. And so the idea is to use as light a touch as possible, but still be able to prevent, to the extent we can, problems with the campaign finance, with corruption. And I think the answer going forward is we're going to have to raise campaign contribution limits. It's now at $2,600. It sounds like a lot of money, but it's actually pretty ridiculously low. I think that needs to go up, and I think we need to improve our disclosure so that 501c4s, other types of organizations, can't spend quote-unquote dark money in elections. So I think that's probably the way forward.
My name is Gabby Idowu, and I wanted to know, do candidates have the option of spending their own money as part of the campaign funding?
They do, yeah. And actually, the original version of the Federal Election Campaign Act said that you could only spend a certain amount of cash, you could only spend 50 grand of your own money on your own race, but Buckley struck that down. So you can spend an unlimited amount of cash, and that's a lot of the reason why you see self-made or millionaires, billionaires running for office. They're able to, without accepting, really engaging in any effort to fundraise, they can go ahead and self-fund their own campaigns.
I think that's all we have time for, but on behalf of the Hinckley Institute of Politics, we'd like to thank Matthew Sanderson for coming to talk to us today and giving us an excellent forum.